Humorist and radio personality Garrison Keillor reported last week on a problem, a major problem, at the Minnesota State Fair. In case his name doesn't ring a bell, Garrison is the creator and driving force behind the long-running Saturday night radio variety show Prairie Home Companion, best known for his stories about the comings and goings in the mythical town of Lake Wobegon. Inasmuch as last week's broadcast was taped in front of a live fair audience, Garrison reported on some of the events at the fair, including the latest version of deep-fried foods and some strange happenings in several of the competitions. It seems that the results of the flower show and the piano talent contest were topsy-turvy, almost completely opposite what anyone in their right mind would have expected. The worst-looking flowers, weeds really, were named Best of Show. And a similar upset took place in the piano competition as a beginning student with careless and nervous mistakes aplenty was awarded first place while an acclaimed piano virtuoso received only an honorable mention. Clearly, something had gone wrong. It turns out that all the usual, trained, experienced judges had gone on strike. And so the fair administrators had to find substitute judges for this year's competitions. A ready-made source of replacement judges magically appeared when a Lutheran convention turned out to be in town at the same time. The problem came when all these nice, well-intentioned, good churchgoers took their Sunday school lessons to heart and began to judge the contests according to what they read in the Bible. Verses such as, "Judge not, lest you be judged. The first shall be last, and the last shall be first. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." Not to mention today's reading about not putting oneself above others and welcoming those who are so often left out and have no ability to repay you. Now, it may be that Garrison's story about unorthodox, unconventional judges at the Minnesota State Fair is just another tall tale, but like most good humor, it holds a kernel of deep truth. What do you and I do with these odd sayings and odd ways of Jesus that turn the world and normal behavior upside down and inside out? Do we listen to them, maybe even memorize them and let them fester in us like a time bomb? Do we let them go in one ear and out the other, as if we never heard them, as if they were nice sounding, but totally unrealistic and impractical? In doing my homework for this sermon, I was reminded that Jesus does not ask our opinion about his ideas, nor does he ask what we think or feel about them. Rather, he calls us simply to get up and do them. "Come, follow me," he says. "Live as I do and see the difference it makes in your life and in the world. Don't do it because it's easy. Do it because it's life-giving and life-transforming." To be a Christian is to be on a lifelong journey of transformation. We don't come here to church to have our ideas, our worldview, our lifestyle reinforced and rubber stamped by God. We come to have our hearts and minds broken open so that the light and love of God can shine in us and through us. And what's true for us personally is also true for us collectively. As the great Russian writer Boris Pasternak expresses it, churches can't just talk about transformation. They have to practice it themselves. Of course, that's easier said than done, but Jesus' invitation is not just to settle for who we are already, but to strive always for something more, something better, even if we can't fully anticipate or predict what that new life will be like. As a congregation, we are on the brink of just such a transformation. Not a revolution where we throw everything out that we have known and done before, but a transformation that moves us slowly but steadily from one phase of our life into a new phase of life. Some of us, almost a year ago, traveled to Columbus, Ohio, to experience a church that is working as we strive to work in ministry with the poor and is doing some new and innovative things in that ministry, including taking folks who simply had been recipients of the church's grace into becoming co-workers with them in the ministry of Jesus Christ. I was caught up when I saw and experienced that form of transformation. Earlier this summer, I read the book Weight of Mercy, which tells the story of a second career pastor. Because she's Baptist and because she can't find a job in a Baptist church, so goes to work running a ministry for the homeless and near homeless in her community, housed in a former United Methodist church. In the course of that book, she comes to understand the difference between feeding people's addictions, helping them just keep on keeping on, versus daring to believe that human life is precious to God. Every human life is precious to God. And transformation is the work of the church, not just helping people keep on, but to move beyond. Her story and what I experienced along with others last fall has been festering in me. And so earlier this month, in consultation with the leaders of our outreach committee and with Deb Virgo, who's heading up our Friday community and food pantry for us at this stage, we put together an application to the annual conference for some funding that would move us in that direction. Problem is, God's been talking to me even while we wait to hear the answer back from the conference. I don't know whether we're going to get any money from them to help us do this ministry, but God keeps pushing me to saying we need to move into this new form of ministry regardless of whether there's any money for us or not. That we need to move beyond simply opening the doors and providing staples, food items, personal hygiene items, and the like, helping persons make it from day to day and week to week, but we need to move beyond that into working with persons to help them move ahead in their life according to the goals that they have, the goals that God has placed in them. And so in the next month, I will be learning what it means to carve out part of my weekly time to spend with persons in order to be transformed with them. Because the truth is, you can't be part of a transforming experience without finding your own life touched and impacted by that as well. Jesus says to all of us, It's not simply enough to provide hospitality and care for those who look like you and act like you and dress like you and have the ability to pay you back. The call is to extend not just the hand of friendship, but the gift of life and transformation to persons who can find it nowhere else. Thursday evening, I sat in the parking lot across the street as members of this church, along with other United Methodist churches throughout the city, welcomed neighbors and students, one and alike. Ted Finlayson Schuller called me over to a particular table to meet a young student who was interested in what we do here and how she could be a part of the ministry. And then another young woman that I had met standing in line came and joined us. I talked to both of them about what would happen if they came here on Friday morning, how it is that they could be part of what we do on behalf of our neighbors. And then I looked across the table at the woman sitting there who turns out to be a post-PhD, waiting for a visa so that she can take her first job here in the States, asking her what she had done before she came here from Bangladesh. It turned out that she had done job training for unskilled women in Bangladesh. God's working. She and I have much to talk about. But a gift of God dropped into our laps with someone who knows what it's like to work with folks who are economically challenged and to give them hope, and more than hope, to give them a path to move ahead in their life. As a congregation, we have much, much to be grateful for. And we also have much to strive for. And the words of this old guy named Jesus keep troubling my soul and won't let me rest until all are not just welcome, but all are empowered and recognized for the gifts that they are. I hope he troubles your soul too. Amen.